It's time.
What time is it?
Time for the show about people.
No, it's not a witch hunt, Bill. This is a serious problem in our culture.
Politics.
We will disagree, we will argue, and we will come to some sort of a conclusion.
And just plain fun.
I'm a first-time caller. I'm just cracking up because this is hilarious.
Fox News analyst.
She's the vice president of Family PAC Federal.
Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Well, over the weekend, I think the big story was the Pope coming back from his week-long visit in Brazil, which we have not covered only because of the circumstances. But I was very moved by many of the things that he said. I know once when he got off the beaten path, his security was very upset because the crowds were thronging, and he was loving it. He was greeting people. He was bringing them, you know, greetings in the name of Jesus, and he did a lot of courageous things and said a lot of good things. But on the plane, on the return trip, he did sort of an interview with the news poll. And now it sounds as though the Pope may have stepped in it. Let's listen to this clip.
Pope Francis appears to be signaling a shift in tone, if not church policy, toward gays. In a wide-ranging in-flight news conference, Francis said he won't judge gay priests.
Con una persona così.
Returning from his first papal trip to Brazil, the pontiff said, if someone is gay and searches for the Lord, who am I to judge? Francis' predecessor, Pope Benedict, signed a document saying men who had deep-rooted homosexual tendencies should not be priests. Francis also addressed talk of a gay lobby, a term regularly used by Italian media. Some news reports suggested that a group of gay clergymen exert undue influence on Vatican policy. Other reports said allegations of that gay lobby contributed to Benedict's decision to resign. Francis said everyone writes about the gay lobby, but no one has given him an ID card with the word gay written on it. On another matter, the Pope said he found no basis to allegations that one of his trusted monsignors was involved in a gay tryst. Francis said he investigated the allegations according to canon law and found nothing to back them up. He took journalists to task for reporting on the matter, saying the allegations concerned matters of sin, not crimes like sexually abusing children. And when someone sins and confesses, he said, God not only forgives, but forgets. Matt Friedman, Associated Press.
All right. Well, here's the thing. Every news outlet is reporting, basically hinting, that the Pope has sort of winked now at the possibility of gay priests, which is different than his predecessor, who abdicated not that long ago and had come down pretty hard and actually written a book recently saying that priests that have a tendency to homosexuality, though, shouldn't even be allowed into seminary, that they should, you know, earlier he had made a softer statement. If they had inclinations but weren't acting on it, then they should, that it should be okay. But then he sort of hardened his own stance on this. And so many of people are taking this to mean that Pope Francis is now backing up a little bit and allowing a window of opportunity for homosexual priests. Well, in the studio with me is my good friend Peter LaBarbera, the founder of Americans for Truth About Homosexuality. Pete worked for Concerned Women for America in our Culture and Family Institute, and he's a not only dear friend, but he is probably one of the nation's leading experts on all things about the gay movement. Peter, welcome, first of all.
Hey, thank you, Sandy. Thanks for having me.
All right, so what do you know about this situation with the Pope that people may not be hearing from all of the press?
Well, what they're not hearing is that the Pope did not change the Catholic Catechism. The Pope is not welcome. I mean, this is not a revolutionary act by the Pope. The media went all over it. Many stories. I just read the Washington Post story last night. It says it's a whole new attitude towards gay people. Part of the problem is, Sandy, we have a nomenclature problem, which is the word gay. As you know, people all take the word differently. To some, it's somebody who struggles with homosexual tendencies. To others, it's a gay activist, a homosexual activist. What the Pope said was, in one of the things he said, which is only not many places reported this, is he said, what is wrong is it's the people aren't the problem, but lobbying on the basis of the orientation is a problem. Well, the whole homosexual activist movement is lobbying on the basis of homosexuality, homosexual sexual orientation, so-called. And so the Pope is saying that he compared that to being to greedy, lobbying on the behalf of being greedy. So the Pope is not becoming a gay activist here. I do think there's a problem with that word gay, because then it's, you know, it seems to me that the last thing that the Catholic Church needs is more homosexual priests. I mean, the devastation that they wrought, the whole penetration of the church from homosexual pederasts that got into the church because they went, they made the rules more lax getting in. They molested boys and teenagers. It was homosexuality. As you know, the whole history of pederasty and homosexuality. Then they covered up the pederasty. They moved these priests around. And now the same homosexual activists say, well, you can't believe the Catholic Church because they harbored pedophilia. So homosexuality has done incredible devastation to this church. And now you listen to gay activists, and it's like they don't even acknowledge that. It's so bizarre. They don't acknowledge homosexual activists never take responsibility for their own behavior and the repercussions from it.
I think that's true. And I think that probably, Pete, you would probably say it this way. The homosexual movement, the radical activist gay homosexual movement, is very narcissistic. You know, everything is about them. In fact, I have to say, this is a tact that a lot of we're going to hear more about this from black pastors who are discovering that gay activists do nothing, certainly in the black community, to help. It's always about them. They want their issue to be advanced, and that's all they think about. They are consumed. Say a word about that, Peter. They are consumed by everything sexual, particularly homosexual.
Well, I think you're right. I mean, look at the drive now to end the blood ban, the ban on homosexual men giving blood. I think it's 1977. If you're a man who had sex with a man since 1977, or a woman who had sex with a man who had sex with a man, you can't give blood. Now, we see the STD rates rising. They're not going down. It's getting worse. We have homosexual leaders now admitting HIV is a gay disease. It's not uncommon for them to say that anymore. And yet at the same time now, we have homosexual activists saying, we want to give blood because it's all about me, me, me. It's a gay rights cause to them. Everything they do is about advancing the normalcy of homosexuality. I think this arises from the trouble in their conscience. I think that's what the whole gay marriage battle is mostly about. You look at the numbers, they're not great. There's not a lot of people getting quote unquote same sex married. It's all about, we want marriage because we want it to be quote equal, but it's not equal.
It's not equal. And I think the same thing goes, of course, for adoption of children. Desperate, you know, it's like it's a conversation about them and their rights, not about the best interests of the children to have a mother and a father. And so so now the Pope has said these things about gay priests, and they're at least purporting it. It'll be interesting to see if he responds to this. If he comes back and says, oh, no, that's not what I was talking about. I kind of think he will. He's been so orthodox on other things, Peter, that this seems to me a man who really understands who God is. And so we'll see how he responds to that. But in the press today, you're going to hear a lot about how the Pope is affirming this, and it may be a different story. We have to take a break. But when we come back, Peter and I have so much to talk about. We want to talk to you about what's going on in the various states in regard to homosexual marriage, and also what's going on at the Justice Department. You won't be too surprised, since all of it seems to be bad news. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Sandy Rios back with you, and that tolling sounds a lot like the National Cathedral. And the story I mentioned just a few minutes ago was that the National Cathedral in Washington, D.C. was also attacked with this green paint. And so Pete LaBarbera is my guest, and Peter is the founder of the Americans for Truth about homosexuality. Pete, you had a comment about that. It's a very interesting observation.
Well, yeah, I mean, you could say that the cathedral was desecrated by the vandalism, Sandy, but I think that the cathedral has already been desecrated by homosexual activism and sexual immorality. After the Supreme Court decision on DOMA and Prop 8, which, of course, is a huge decision ushering in potentially gay marriage for the whole country as we see it down the road, the National Cathedral rang its bells, after a war is over, as if celebrating. So here is, I thought this was just such terrible symbolism for our nation. Here is a devastating decision, one more notch on the belt of America's immoral, growing immorality, and our national cathedral, our Christian symbol for our country, rang its bells in celebration.
Wow, that's, yeah. You know, I made the observation last week, Peter, that green paint on the Lincoln Memorial was a metaphor, something that we could see, a disgusting marring, scarring of something so precious to Americans, which is exactly what's happening in Washington in ways we can't see. And so there are all kinds of things to draw from this. One other word, you know, the Pope, we in the first segment, in case you just tuned in, the Pope made a statement on the plane, made several statements on the plane all the way back from Brazil to Rome about that many people, certainly news outlets, are taking as sort of a softer stance on gay priests. But you had another observation, Peter, that I think is really important, especially for our Catholic listeners.
Well, I think, Sandy, here's the reality. Most Catholics don't understand the teachings of their church on homosexuality. They don't know the catechism. The homosexual acts are intrinsically disordered. They don't know the teachings. And the teachings, there are some great verbiage on homosexuality, about homosexual adoption, some of the pastoral letters. And so I think what the media is doing here is they immediately jumped on this, these Pope Francis comments, and they interpreted them as they wanted to see them, which is, oh, it's ushering in a whole new policy welcoming gays. Well, actually, I just read a homosexual activist publication which said, no, everything's the same. He affirms the catechism. He's a strong defender of the Catholic catechism. And so this is not a sea change, but the media, as it always does, is actually part of the homosexual lobby now, and they are going to use this in whatever way they can to soften up the Catholic Church, because already we see this tremendous softening in the church where many Catholics now are even supporting so-called gay marriage. And so there's a lot of ignorance among Catholics about their own church teachings.
In fact, let me just read for a second to make it clear to Protestants and Catholics alike listening, because I think it's important. The Catholic faith teaching on this, it says that acts of grave depravity is what homosexualities talked about, and they say that they are intrinsically disordered, and that under no circumstances can they be approved. And so that's just one. There's a lot of teachings on it. Yeah, go ahead.
I can read this quote, too, from the Pope. He said, "The problem is not having this orientation. We must be brothers. The problem is lobbying by this orientation, or lobbies of greedy people, political lobbies, Masonic lobbies, so many lobbies. This is the worst problem." That's the Pope. Now, that wasn't widely reported, I believe, that quote. And so, Sandy, what he's talking about is any lobbying on behalf of homosexuality, which would include gay, so-called gay relationships, all gay rights legislation, all homosexual advocacy, that is immoral, according to the Pope.
And I think a further explanation that I'm reading from Catholics who are talking about this morning is that the statement in the Catechism is that homosexuals must be accepted with respect, compassion, and sensitivity, and every sign of unjust discrimination should be avoided. But they go on to explain proper discrimination has to be put in place. And when homosexual activists or homosexual men acting out want to become priests, it's forbidden. And that is a discrimination that's just. So that's what they go on to say. So the Catholic teaching on this is actually very, very good. And I think we just need to be clear about that.
Yeah. And I love that phrase, proper discrimination, Sandy. And I think maybe we need to start talking about that. Look, when my daughter brings a guy home, I'm going to properly discriminate against that guy, and I'm going to see about his character and everything else. And everybody discriminates in their life in the proper way.
You're such a hater, Pete. Anyway, let's talk about what's going on in various states, because after the decision of the Supreme Court, now it's been about a month ago. Gosh, Peter, we haven't talked since then. I was there on the steps of the court, and I just felt like I know people listening that day probably thought that's one of the worst reports I've ever heard anyone give from the Supreme Court. But I have to say, I felt like a knife had been stuck in my heart in several places. It was very grieving to me. And so a lot of things have happened. Now, the Supreme Court practically, in effect, turned California back to gay marriage, overturned Prop 8, but they overturned the Federal Defense of Marriage Act, which is shocking in itself. That is absolutely shocking. That is a federal law signed by a president, and the legislative branch should have stepped up to the plate and said, no, you're not going to do that. We are an equal branch of government, but they didn't, because they let the courts decide everything. And so now we have this fight going to various states. Can you tell us, for instance, what's going on in Ohio?
Well, the devastating part about the Prop 8 decision, Sandy, as you know, is that it essentially allowed liberals to decide which laws they're going to enforce. By throwing it back to the basically the decisions prior in California. They said what happened in California, as you know, is that Schwarzenegger and virtually the entire Democratic political class said they were not going to defend Prop 8, which was passed by the people in that remarkable victory. Remember, it was blacks, whites, and Latinos working together. They defended marriages between one man and one woman. And then this was challenged in the courts, as the homosexuals always do. If they can't get it in the vote, then they just try to get it through the courts, and nobody defended it. Well, by allowing this to be struck down essentially because it wasn't defended, now you're seeing liberal Democrats all across the country are going to say, we're not going to defend our state's marriage law. I believe it happened in New Mexico. I think it's going to happen in Pennsylvania, I think I heard. And now we just saw the decision in Ohio where we have a couple of men. I think one is dying, and they want their marriage out of state. I think it was Maine, to be recognized. They got two men got so-called Maryland, so-called married, and they want that to be recognized. And a court, I think it was a federal court, actually said yes, it will be recognized. So of course we're going to see now homosexual activists challenging every single anti-gay marriage amendment in every state.
Yeah, and I think, and of course, it's going to be up to the courts, and the courts are going to be all over the map, and it's going to end up back in the Supreme Court again, and then we already saw what the court did with the two decisions already, so it doesn't look good, and we have now a battle for, there's no Supreme Court justice vacancy right now, but there are a lot of vacancies, and so the courts are shifting, and there's an all-out assault to get those courts populated by leftists, and so they're doing a good job with that. So it's an interesting thing. It's like a period of lawlessness. It's just lawlessness. It's just unraveling one strand at a time. Now, there are 33 states or 36 states that have bans on same-sex marriage.
I'm not sure the actual number, Sandy, but I was going to say, too, also that at this time when it is unraveling, you see Republicans less and less likely to stand for truth. And, you know, even this whole line of these libertarians coming in and saying, no, gay marriage is a conservative issue. And so you can't even rely on Republicans to come in and defend the law and common sense on marriage.
Well, could we just add that that's not new? That we have had a serious problem since the time of the Bush administration. Peter, you know this. We saw homosexual activists populate legislative offices of congressmen and senators. They got into the highest levels of the White House, and we saw a decline in any willingness to even articulate a fear, a muting way. It's been happening for 10 years, and so now it's just progressed, and hardly anyone seems able or willing to even articulate this and certainly to fight it. And so it's just amazing. And people, you know, who are fighting this in various states have to, you know, want unpublished numbers. They have to go underground. You know, in fact, there are some states, Peter, where I wanted to do interviews to find out who's fighting it, you know, and I couldn't find the people. I knew there was like a movement, a website, but everybody is, there's punishment they in terms of their jobs, in terms of, you know, even the government. I mean, for heaven's sake, the Billy Graham Association, Samaritan's Purse, was audited because they signed in. They did a one-page ad, you know, supporting the North Carolina Marriages Between One Man and One Woman Act. So I don't know if people understand how serious we saw in Prop 8 in California, people losing jobs, people's names published, their addresses published, vandalism.
And that's part, and people have to understand, that's part of the homosexual activist strategy. They talk about tolerance and rights and equality, but then there's the thuggery, there's the political thuggery, and this goes all the way back, Sandy. I've been doing some reading on gay history in New York City. You know the way they got started. This is they remember the Zaps. The Zaps were a tactic.
No, I don't remember the Zaps.
You don't remember the Zaps, but I don't know if you ever read about the Zaps. What a Zap was? Okay, let's say you're a politician, Sandy Rios. You're coming out of your office for some press event or something, and a homosexual activist would jump out at you and say, Congressman Rios, what will you answer the homosexuals? Basically, get in their face, yelling and screaming about supporting so-called homosexual equality. It was a bully tactic. And what's fascinating about it, when this is back in the 70s in New York, with right after Stonewall, you know, this is the homosexual movement, really not modern homosexual movement, actually dates back to the 60s and 70s. It's ridiculous. It's so young. But invariably these politicians and the media would cave in the face of this political bullying. And so basically the homosexuals have learned, the activists have learned, that everybody caves, whether it's Dr. Laura or, you know, all these, the media that they pressure, and they've gotten a lot of what they want by this sort of bully pressure tactics. And so they're just ramping it up now that they have so much power, because the media is not really watching them. So we have the ridiculous situation where we have a guy like Dan Savage, who is a hateful homosexual activist who created a whole website. We can't even say how he defined Rick Santorum's name. It's so filthy, disgusting. And yet he has a book tour in which he's being welcomed. This is a guy who's done all these hateful antics. Remember what he did to Gary Bauer? He spit on the doorknob to try to give Gary Bauer a cold. He's been feted. He's been welcomed at all these media outlets, giving him interviews about his book. If that were a conservative, that person would not get any publicity. But because he's on the left, Dan Savage, he's treated like a celebrity regardless of what he's done.
Yeah, well, and that's all true, all of it. And Peter, if we know of anybody that has not caved, would you say? I don't think Anita Bryant ever caved, did she? But they did that was like for people who don't even know who that is, Anita Bryant was a Miss America, and she took a stand on this, was in the 70s, I believe, 80s maybe, and boy, did she get destroyed. She just really got, she was a woman who was very articulate, very passionate, very bright. And she really took this on. And I don't even know where Anita is now. If she's in my hearing, Anita, you're a hero of mine.
Yes.
I don't think she ever did equivocate on that.
I don't think Anita caved, and I think she deserves credit for that. And there are precious few. And a lot of people, Sandy, and I don't even give names. We know some of them, even people in the media. They could do so much more, but they choose to go silent. That's another way of capitulating. You see conservatives who say, how can we capitulate on this and that issue? But when it comes to the homosexual issue, they themselves capitulate. So that's the kind of, we see a lot of cowardice on this issue. Meanwhile, the other side is very aggressive.
Yeah, you better believe it. In fact, now, we've talked about what the Pope did, Peter, but we didn't talk about just one of the latest things that happened in evangelical circles. And this has to do with something that happened at Fuller Seminary, which is in California, which has held the highest reputation around the globe for many, many years. I don't know how many, but a long time. I'd say decades, at least. And now something has happened at Fuller that's very concerning. And can you tell us what's going on there?
Well, Fuller Theological Seminary is allowing a homosexual activist student group. I guess they wouldn't say activist. They would say an LGBT student group. But of course, Sandy, the moment you recognize so-called gay identity and a positive affirmation of homosexuality, that's not Christian, and that certainly doesn't belong at a seminary. It's outrageous, and I think they need to reverse this decision, or they could lose their reputation and a lot of the support that they've earned over the years.
Let's talk about this for a second. Now, this is the president of Fuller has done this, has embraced this this group for LGBT. Would they embrace a group of adulterers on campus or a group of guys who watch pornography? Well, what's the stipulation? Supposedly, if they don't act down on it, but they can meet together and identify as such. Now, could they say, Peter, that maybe this is a help group? You know, this is like they're seeking therapy? Is it under the guise of? But then why would you recognize them as a campus group? I mean, do you recognize all the women who are, you know, struggling with soap operas? They're now a recognized campus club. I mean, that's a very distinct kind of category.
Yeah, and what it is it's giving homosexuality special consideration among sins, and that's wrong. And Sandy, you did exactly the thing that I tell people to do all the time, the sexual substitution or just the sin substitution test. Instead of the word gay, put in another sin and see if it makes sense. We would never see the president of Fuller Seminary coming out and saying, you know, we recognize that a lot of our male students especially are porn users, and so we want to affirm them, and so we recognize the Porn Users Fuller Club. We wouldn't see that because it's wrong. So why are they doing it on homosexuality? The reason they're doing it is because of pressure. That's what it comes down to. The homosexual activists are great at putting pressure on people, and basically a lot of people can't take it, Sandy, and they cave. And that's what's going on here.
And they are in California, and there's tremendous pressure in California. Do you happen to know right offhand what the response has been to Fuller doing that? I realize, I know that people that you and I know who are activists on this issue have taken them to task. But I wonder if there have been any public reckoning from other evangelical leaders. We're going to take a break and we'll come back and talk about that. And by the way, Christopher Doyle will be joining us. Christopher is an ex-gay himself, and he's going to tell us about something that a fight that is a continuing fight on reparative therapy, a story that's coming out of New Jersey. And we'll be back with that. This is Sandy Rios coming to you live from Chicago, and it is a pleasure to be home for this week. We'll be right back with Peter LaBarba of Americans for Truth About Homosexuality after this. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net.
That's sandy@afr.net.
Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Sandy Rios back with you. Hey, so nice to spend this time with you. Coming to you live from Chicago, I'm hosting an event on Lake Michigan tonight, so I'll tell you all about it tomorrow. But we started the show today talking to you about how the Pope made some comments on the plane ride back from Brazil. Peter LaBarba is my guest in studio. He's the founder of Americans for Truth About Homosexuality. Well, my next guest is an ex-gay himself. Christopher Doyle is the director of the International Healing Foundation. Chris is now married, has children, and is an articulate spokesman for the notion that you actually can change your life. You can become whole sexually. It's an ongoing battle, but it does happen. It happens for thousands of people, and they are called ex-gays. But you never hear that because no one on television or in any of our media outlets, even the friendly ones, ever want to talk to ex-gays. It's amazing. I experienced this firsthand when I was president of CWA, and we tried to get our ex-gay friends out in public and in front of the mics to talk about their stories. Nobody wanted to hear them. It undermined the whole effort of the homosexual lobby, and so people in media didn't want to tell that story. Well, tomorrow in the nation's capital, thousands of ex-gays are descending to be heard, and Chris Doyle joins us to tell us about that. Good morning, Chris.
Good morning, Sandy. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. So what's happening tomorrow?
Well, we are descending on Capitol Hill, as you said, and we are going to let our voices be heard. As you know, Washington, D.C. is the only jurisdiction in the United States that ex-gays are actually a protected class against discrimination. However, we would like that to be across the United States, and we are demanding that not only Congress hear our voices, but at 2 p.m. we are going to stand in front of the Supreme Court and hold a rally and press conference and demand that Justice Kennedy understand that gays and lesbians are not the only sexual orientation class that faces animus in this country.
Chris, you know, the common thought is that ex-gays don't stay ex. You know, Exodus International just closed down and kind of sold out completely. Alan Chambers really sold out. And I think those of us who work on this issue understand what a struggle. I think it's a struggle for anyone with an addiction to break that addiction. People who are addicted to food know that you can lose a lot of weight and then it's really easy to go back into the cycle and you got to get a hold of yourself and lose it again. But there are, if you were to give an estimate, as impossible as this is, how many ex-gays would you say? I mean, are we talking hundreds, thousands?
Well, first of all, let me comment on the Exodus International. I don't believe Exodus International sold out. What I believe was you have a group of leaders and leadership in Exodus International who are same-sex attracted that instead of doing their psychotherapeutic work, simply tried to pray it away for years and years and years and failed. And we're not discounting the power of God and Christianity. We know that God allows and gives us great knowledge in order to get effective help on various medical and psychological issues. But what we're seeing with some of the folks at International, unfortunately, is a flat-out refusal to understand the complexities of their same-sex attraction and do that work. And when you do that for years and years and years and you don't change, you become to be disillusioned with the process and then you project that onto everyone else and say, well, I can't change, so no one else can change. And that's exactly what we saw at Exodus. Now, to answer your question about the numbers, that is such a hard question to answer. In fact, I was just speaking with a reporter about this yesterday. And we see that so many people are making choices when they have same-sex attraction to live heterosexual lives. Sometimes those people change, sometimes they don't. But if I were to really make a good estimate, I would say the number is in the tens of thousands. But of course, we know that those people are so much in the closet because of fear, shame, of threats from gay activists, and also just the not wanting to identify themselves by their sexual feelings or their past sexual feelings, that they don't really come out and walk in parades. And that's why it really is difficult for us to get those people to come out and share their voices. So that's why we're doing it on their behalf.
Well, Chris, let's get specific, because there may be people listening who, you know, are saying, wow, I'd like to be part of that, or I'd certainly like to explore it. I've got a brother, a sister, an uncle. I myself fit in that category. How could they get more information about this event tomorrow?
Well, first of all, go to our website at voiceofthevoiceless.info, and we're going to be lobbying tomorrow starting around 9 o'clock in the morning until about 1 o'clock, and so you have to set up appointments with your congressman or congressional staff, which is fairly easy to do at the last minute. But what we really need is people to come out and stand with us at 2 p.m. in front of the Supreme Court. Of course, we know that our opponents are going to be out there actively counting how many people show up, and they're going to say, you know, all kind of, you know, they're going to say things against us no matter what. If we have 100 people or 10 people show up, they're going to say bad things. So, but we want to make a good showing. We want to show that people do exist, that our allies are out there, and quite honestly, we want people to stick their necks out and say, you know, we don't agree with this homofascism that's going on in this country, which means you can only have one viewpoint on homosexuality, and that's you're born this way and you cannot change. We don't agree with that. And we want our allies to come out there and support us and stand with what we're trying to do, which is speak up for all the tens of thousands of people out there that have no voice. And that's why we named this organization Voice of the Voiceless, because many of those people out there, Sandy, they don't have a voice. And you can find out more information at voiceofthevoiceless.info.
You know, Chris, I so wish I were going to be back in D.C. tomorrow, because I'd come join you guys. I'd be standing there. That would be much more encouraging to me than being out front when the Supreme Court made their decision, which I was there. I'd love to be
We've got to start somewhere, and we're going to start tomorrow. But this is going to be a yearly celebration. And I believe that as we go on, and people start coming out and really speaking the truth and telling their story, and unafraidedly so, I think more and more people are going to come out. And a Sandy Rios encouraging to do that would really help.
well, I am doing that. You bet. Hey, Chris, Peter LaBarber is sitting right next to me here, and he has a question for you.
Hey, Chris, how you doing?
Great.
Hey, and I applaud your courage in doing this, and I think it's very important, and what you say is true. I mean, I've heard from countless people who don't want to be public, and you know, who wants to talk about their past life? Most people don't. But my question for you is, with what's going on in New Jersey, of course, the bills before Christie to ban reparative therapy for youth, and in other states, California, do you see this spreading across the United States? Where do you see this headed with this effort to basically criminalize reparative therapy?
Well, I think a lot is going to determine on what the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals decides. And we've been waiting for that decision seemingly for a long time. It should have been handed down by now. So the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals heard oral arguments in April, and that's going to determine a lot about the ramifications. Now, let's just say that Governor Christie caves and signs that bill into legislation. It will be immediately challenged by Liberty Counsel in the federal court system in New Jersey. My personal opinion is I don't believe this legislation is going to go through en masse because it's unconstitutional, and I also believe that that basically most of the states are not as liberal and would pass this legislation. However, I do think that we need to continue to be adamant about opposing this, and I've done so on multiple state levels, and we appreciate your support, Pete.
Hey, Chris, let me ask you one final question. You know, we have a lot of homosexual activists that monitor the show. They're listening this morning. They're not listening because they're friends. They're listening because they want to report on what I'm saying on this show, and I just want to ask you, as a man who was gay and in the lifestyle, who is now married and has children, what would you say to them this morning? Is it worth coming out? Is it possible? Just say whatever it is that you'd want to say to them.
what I would say to a homosexual activist out there is, don't be deceived. Stop drinking the Kool-Aid. You've been fed a bunch of lies for a lot of years. And you know what? Change is always possible. Change is always possible. You can always make a choice to make a different path. But regardless of whether or not you choose to change, we love you. We love you as God loves all of us unconditionally. And we hope that you can find the truth for your life and make a decision to live an honest life. But I want you to look at the research. I want you to listen to the testimonies. I want you to find out the real truth and not just be fed a bunch of lies from activists who are giving you bogus research. So do your own research. If you don't take it for our, if you won't take our word, do it for yourself and really do an honest and thorough, objective search for what the truth is. And I think that you will be a better person for that.
And would you just say, Chris, I'm a better person? Is that, would that be the, if you were to die tomorrow, what would you say about the change in your own life? How would you just, I mean, what has it meant to you? Is it, it's just you're a better person? Or is it, what is it? You fill in the blank.
Well, for me, I tried to pray away the gay for years, Sandy. And I, my heart goes out to people who I hear that are gay and lesbian. They say, well, I tried to pray too. And what I want to say to those people is, you're praying the wrong prayer. God could take away the same-sex attractions if he wanted to, but he won't. And the reason why is, underneath those same-sex attractions, and this is what Exodus International doesn't get, this is what the Alan Chambers and Randy Thomas doesn't get, underneath those same-sex attractions are legitimate needs for love and fulfillment and emotional connection for men. In my life, once I bonded with men, once I really got those emotional needs met in men, I had no desire, I had no reason to sexualize those needs anymore. I was able to fulfill those desires in non-sexual ways, and I haven't looked back in 9 years. And you can read more of that story at comingoutlove.com. So look beneath those desires and see that there's actually a reason. And believe me, I work with men every day. You know, in the last 4 years, I've worked about 150 clients that have SSA, and I can tell you that when they have what we call an authentic emotional connection with another man, not sexual, authentic emotional connection, that is so much more fulfilling than sex. It's so much more fulfilling, and I would love for people out there who are same-sex attracted to understand what that feels like and not just be sexualizing all those needs.
All right, well, let me just say again that Christopher Doyle is our guest. Christopher Doyle, in case you're listening and you want to find out more, it's Voice of the Voiceless. And ex-gays will be descending on the Capitol. We don't know what the numbers will be tomorrow. They'll be in front of the Supreme Court at 2 o'clock. If you'd like to join them to lobby your congressman, go on Voice of the Voiceless and get the information that you need and come to Washington and find people of like mind in the same struggle. With family members, whatever, you fill in the blanks and do your part. Christopher, it's always a pleasure to talk to you. Thank you for checking in with us this morning.
Thank you, Sandy, and thank you, Pete. Take care.
Okay. All right, Pete, let's talk about something else, because the Department of Justice now is weighing in on these horrible situations we find in public schools. I think of Massachusetts, which is, you know, legions ahead of the rest of the states because of it was the first to pass same-sex marriage. And now they are, you know, they are identifying children in their schools who are little girls who want to be little boys. Teachers are giving them names of, you know, the opposite gender without parental consent or notification. Later encouraging them ways that they could actually even enter the process of hormonal change. It's just, it's a nightmare, like sci-fi scenario happening in Massachusetts. And now the DOJ has weighed in on this, as a matter of fact. They have forced a school district in California to allow a girl to use a boy's restroom because she calls herself a boy. And this is the Department of Justice statement. The student was born a girl, but is identified as a boy from a young age. The Department of Justice reached a settlement with the public school district in Arcadia. And under the deal, the district must not only change the student's restroom privileges and make similar accommodations on overnight trips, it also must institute a host of measures to ensure transgender students are treated as whatever gender they consider themselves to be. Pete, what's going on here?
Well, I think this is public policy insanity. This is incredible. Now a Holder and the Obama administration are throwing their weight around in the schools on transgender issues. They've done it before on homosexuality in Minnesota. They pushed pro-homosexual policies in a Minnesota school district. Sandy, the transgender movement is just the absurdity. It shows the absurdity of the whole LGBT notion of civil rights. Now they're saying you have a so-called right to go to another restroom that doesn't match your biological gender. And they're doing it to kids. And then, of course, the media is lionizing this whole cause. So the media is playing along. We don't get the coverage it deserves. But I think when they go transgender, they've taken it a step too far. This is even a lot, I think, for some in the media to say that this is civil rights. I mean, Martin Luther King would be rolling over in his grave if he saw what civil rights has become, according to Eric Holder.
You know, the other concerning thing, apart from the topic itself, which is concerning enough, is just the whole notion of parental rights. The fact that schools are taking over the role of parenting and ignoring and the parents' right to have to weigh in on this. And so now this case, I'm not talking about in this particular case. It sounds like this case, the parents, you know, are supporting their little girl becoming a boy or thinking she's a boy, whatever. It is so twisted. 30 seconds.
A lot of times that's what it is. The parents do support it. But it's just like the left, how it works. One case causes the whole school to be radicalized on that issue.
Department of Justice is busy in the midst of all of this. It's really a nightmare. And that's why we have to stop this. We have to get President Obama out. We've got to get Eric Holder out. We have to do something about this. And that's what we're trying to do. Well, this is Sandy Rios. Pete LaBarbera, Americans for Truth About Homosexuality, has been my guest. And we'll be back tomorrow. With more. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.